Welcome, everyone. Thank you for being here. Thank you to Miffy for inviting me to speak. This is the first session of basically a 6-week journey we're going to have on Buddhist mind science. And essentially, what we're going to be doing is looking at how ancient Buddhist wisdom connects with our modern world and what a neuroscience. And what modern science kind of has to say about our experience. While each section of the course every Tuesday night does link together, the reality also is that we can do this as a standalone session as well. Okay, so every session will work in that way. And just to tell you a little bit about myself, I was born on the Sunshine Coast. But I spent most of my life in Nepal. My mom worked for an organization called Helen Keller International in Kathmandu for two stints for about she's worked for about 40 years there. And so, I grew up in Nepal along with my brothers and my father. And what led my parents to Nepal in the first place was Kopan Monastery and Lama Yeshe and Lama Zopa Rinpoche. And every time I wanted to kind of return to Australia or go somewhere else, Lama Zopa Rinpoche always said it's best for the family to be in Nepal. So we kind of always stayed in Nepal for a long period of time. I'm an educator and a coach, but also deeply influenced by the Dharma. Now I've grown up around it. I live in a place called Swayambhu, which is one of the most sacred places for Buddhists in the world. And I've had the fortune of studying with many great teachers, while also kind of understanding a lot about being an educator and a coach, while also understanding a lot about kind of the Western paradigm as well. And I'm really interested in how the two of those link together. I've also written a few children's books. But mostly, I did a retreat on this particular program, the Buddhist Mind Science program, 3 years ago at Kopan Monastery. Have any of you been to Kopan before? Right. So about 3 years ago, I did it. It was like probably maybe a 10-day or 2-week retreat, something like that. And it was all day long from like 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. And I think part of the challenge of this course is there's so much material that you can also have access to each standalone unit. So just for tonight, for example, there's like a 200-page manual. And so like part of the challenge is just like kind of condensing all the information into our 90-minute session and making sure that we have opportunities to experience it and learn together as well, and making sure that's done in a profound way. But yeah, I have the opportunity to be here now because I'm taking a sabbatical. And the first thing I did on sabbatical was do a 1-month retreat at Kopan, and continue to just really enjoy kind of speaking about the Dharma with others, people who are really interested in mind science and Buddhist mind science. And simultaneously, I'm doing a meditation teacher program with a different tradition, the Turgar tradition, but also within the Buddhist, Tibetan Buddhist lineage. And that's with Mingyur Rinpoche. So I'm doing that. And when I was kind of like through that study, I've been kind of really contemplating what I feel like is a way of kind of sharing and learning about the Dharma that is really accessible in this day and age. And I find that the Buddhist Mind Science course and approach is really practical and will help us with just some kind of grounded insights into kind of what is actually happening in the brain when we're doing these ancient contemplative practices. So we're going to begin with just a little meditation, just to kind of focus on our motivation, our intention for doing what we're doing. And I've put some points up there, but if we just in the kind of comfortable position. Make your spine straight, but not rigid. And take a few breaths. And you can gently begin to explore why you've decided to come here this evening or tune in on Zoom. What you may hope to get from the experience of learning together. You can tune into any questions that might arise. And within Mahayana Buddhism, it's really good to try to cultivate a motivation or intention that I'm here to try to be of benefit to others. To be a better person. Cultivate a kinder attitude to family, friends. Colleagues. Strangers. Enemies. And I invite you to look at a long-term view of how what we are generating is not just for this evening or for tomorrow, but potentially have a much greater and further impact. transformative. So we'll just move now on to the next part. And I'd like to hear a little bit from, we have a few of us here today. It'd be really nice if I could learn a little bit about, why you're here, what your interests are, and if we can do like a quick introduction. That would be really nice, I think, for all of us. I think we're here to, like, I really want to emphasize that we're here to learn together and from each other, and that we have, so many experiences that we can share from one another. Wonderful. So I assume it's been helpful.
Yes.
Managing stress. Yeah, and the meditation has been great. Fantastic. It takes a while, yeah. But definitely a more holistic and natural way of doing it. Actually, one of my kind of first practices that I did, when I was about 18, I was introduced to the Nyune practice in Swayambhu with one of my teachers, Trupdob Rinpoche, who actually took care of his holiness, the Dalai Lama's mother in the Patala. He came, or he was tortured by the Chinese, but came to Nepal in
Cool.
the 60s. And he established a monastery in Swayambhu dedicated to Nyune practice, basically, fasting and the praises and prayers to Avalokiteshvara, the Buddha of compassion. And I was just an 18-year-old, but I decided pretty much there and then I wasn't going to drink or smoke or do anything. And then I started university in Australia, and okay, Tim, what a shock that was, that was really interesting to kind of spend, after doing those practices and living in that world, then coming to living on campus in a university environment in Australia and having to navigate all of that. So that was a bit of a shock to the system. But yeah, it's the Nyune practice is incredibly powerful. The power of bodhicitta, which is something that or compassion or loving kindness that we'll really talk about through this course, as being kind of the key ingredient or transformer. For the brain, for the mind, and in terms of really, really learning how to cultivate loving kindness and compassion and lasting happiness, So yeah, I think we'll find that that's really so essential in our study and practice, is how to continue to cultivate this feeling of loving kindness and compassion. And we're all just starting from where we're at, as well, and we are, yeah, just that, starting from our own place. And that's wonderful, that already just the decision to be here, to make the effort to be here this evening, when you have children, when you have grandchildren, when you have so many things to do, is actually a sign of this compassion that you have for self and others, even if you question it yourself. How much do I actually have this compassion for myself or others? Like, just being here right now is a clear sign of that. Connecting what you're saying to what Amanda said, it's so much about this. And the brain is, as we know, with any kind of practice or learning, it's about repetition. It's about consistency, right? It's short times, many times. It's every day reflecting on loving kindness, compassion, bodhicitta. It's reflecting on the benefits of that, making that a part of your practice, not just once, but continually throughout the day, so that like our brain and our consciousness become completely infused with it. And that's what practice is. And it does take effort, right? It does take perseverance. And there are going to be times when it's like, ooh, bad day, right? But that's the same thing with whatever we do in life, right? We have bad day. We show up with, whether it's for me, like I'm also a coach. So like if you have a bad day at the swimming pool or on the football field or whatever, like that's part of your learning and development as well, right? So not judging ourselves too harshly, but just continuing with the process. It's so wonderful that we try to address, like, we're going to talk a little bit about stress and anxiety tonight, if we get to it, and throughout the whole course. But just like, from my experience of like living in Asia and spending so many years in Nepal and then being, in the West as well. And it's like, it's almost like, of course, our bodies naturally experience, hyperarousal and stress and anxiety. But it's really like not a thing in the same way, in Nepal as it is here. Like it's almost like another pandemic, right? And the question is like, why? How do we keep up with this like kind of consumerism, with this materialistic lifestyle? It's impossible. The expectations are impossible, right? And it leads us down this road of kind of like a vicious cycle, or like a catch-22 of like, we get stressed, and then, we get stressed because we're stressing and we can't keep up with everything that we're doing. And it's really, really challenging, because then, like, the ways that, like, for example, Western medicine tries to help all of this as well, like, takes you down a whole other path. So to learn some grounding techniques through meditation, to know that, like, within the Dharma, within Buddhism, we believe that there is a Buddha within all of us. We all have that potential. This course is about activating that potential. How do we get closer to that potential, right? And that is that maybe that key difference between Buddhism and any other religion, is this understanding that we all possess Buddha nature, and we all just have to, one step at a time through our inner journey, get closer and closer to that Buddha nature, right? But knowing that, like, no matter where we're starting from, we are not broken, right? That there is this absolute pure Buddha energy within all of us. And really learning to just kind of trust in that and connect on that level. Yeah, in that sense, like, we're all fellow travelers together. Like, we're all on this. I want to emphasize this kind of collaborative approach, is that we're learning together. I'm here to kind of help share and guide the process, but I don't see myself as teaching the process. I see ourselves as learning about this together, learning from each other, sharing stories, sharing experiences, relating the science and the Dharma to what we experience on an everyday basis, because that's really the point, right? If we can't take the ancient wisdom or the science and adapt it to what we're experiencing in this kind of relative existence, then there's no point. We need to find a way to say, okay, here is the medicine, here is the Dharma, how can I take it and experience it on this path on a minute by minute, day to day basis? I encourage conversation. I encourage collaboration. I don't have all the answers. Be gentle. Let's be gentle with ourselves and with each other. Let's practice, being non-judgmental with ourselves and with each other, so that this is a sharing, caring, safe space. And hopefully together we can go on a journey where we take some really positive steps. And that doesn't just help ourselves, but helps everyone around us as well. And when on that note of consistency, like on this journey, we're going to be doing kind of like short times, many times meditations. Okay, so we'll be meditating for short times, but we'll be doing it quite often, for like 3 to 5 minutes, just to kind of continue to go back to that experience of quiet introspection, reflection. And so we're going to do just a grounding by feeling meditation now. Okay, and this is just to kind of help us to ground in the present. Again, just close your eyes, or you can leave them open if you wish. Sit in a comfortable position. With your back straight but not rigid. And if you like, you can just rest your palms in your hands, in each other's hands, and just connect your thumbs. First, I invite you just to feel the sensation of your breath. So breathe in and out. I invite you now to just feel the different sensations of how you're supported to the ground. So you might feel your bum against the chair, your feet on the floor. Your hands on your lap. Just try to be aware of any physical sensation in your body. If you're sitting cross-legged, it might be warmer where your legs meet. Where your hands touch. Just stay with those physical sensations. If something feels a bit uncomfortable, just try to release it a little bit. Invite yourself to let it go. can shift positions. You don't need to stay in one position. If thoughts come, don't go there. Just return to the sensations. They bring you to the here and now. And gently bring your awareness back to the room. Any kind of comments on that meditation? Do people feel a bit more relaxed? I think one thing also, if you're having a hard time feeling relaxed, you can also just use the breath to try to relax the body and the mind. Return to that breath. And so just like inhale through your nose, then exhale out through your mouth, and just focus on a longer, slower exhale. And just to help kind of tap into your parasympathetic nervous system, right? Which will help to kind of slow everything down a little bit. Okay, so now that we've done a little bit of grounding and motivation work, let's just talk a little bit about, you know, what this course is going to be about. It is a Buddhist course. It's an FBMT course. FBMT stands for people who are new, the Foundation for the Preservation of Mahayana Teachings. The founders of FBMT are Lama Dzogchen Rinpoche, on either side of Shakyamuni Buddha, right behind me is Lama Thupten Yeshe and Lama Dzogchen Rinpoche. And they founded this organization. And now there are, you know, hundreds of centers all around the world. And it's had an incredible kind of transformative effect on many people's lives. They are beings with incredible compassion and wisdom. This approach was developed by two Spanish individuals called Hans and Marina. Did anybody read up about the course or like watch the YouTube video or anything? So Hans and Marina, they're two Spanish, I think it was, microbiology that they did their PhD in or something. And then, you know, they were real kind of academics and scientists, and then really wanted to kind of learn, spend that similar kind of energy, but instead of looking at biology, move to the mind. And they did a long, maybe like a 6-year program at one of the FBMT centers. And it's called Instituto Lamazoncappa, which is in Palmaia in Italy, kind of in, near Pisa. And they kind of developed this program and this curriculum, where, you know, Buddhist meditation and contemplative practices are a big part of it, as well as the study of neuroscience as well. So we can understand what's happening in the brain while we meditate and while we practice. You know, techniques that can help us deal with stress and anxiety, understanding the nervous system and how that connects, and, you know, ways to kind of continue to bring awareness and compassion and wisdom into our everyday lives. And really, so this course is for all of you, for all of us, you know, whether you're a beginner and this is your first time here, or whether you've been studying for years. There are benefits that we can get from this course. Okay. But a little bit about like what I was talking about with we're all starting from somewhere, and kind of in terms of going on our inner journey. So, you know, what do we all have in common? That's a question. What do we have in common? We're conscious, Buddha nature. Okay. Sorry?
We're all humans.
We're all human. And what's a key part of this like human condition? Sorry?
Happiness.
Perfect. Happiness and suffering, right? It's this universal, do we agree? Do we agree that we have this like kind of there's this universal human need to want to experience happiness and not want to suffer. We are all kind of seeking happiness, or we are seeking kind of, you know, trying to move away from any kind of feeling of discomfort or suffering. We always want something that was going to give us some kind of pleasure, right? That's why iPhones and dopamine scrolling and all of that has become such an addiction, right? Because it's like those little feelings of like, oh, this is good, right? That we're so addicted to. We know though that the way that we are looking for happiness is not really working, right? And in fact, on the contrary, that pursuit of happiness sometimes leads to greater suffering. So, can you give me like, we'll just do like a little think, pair, share. Oh, sorry, before that. Maybe if you can just talk a little bit amongst yourselves, like with a partner, about a time that you strove to experience happiness, and then did not find that happiness. So, does anybody want to share something that you discussed, like a time where you pursued happiness? I gave you the phone example. But you know, I've got the cheesecake up there as well. You know, whatever it might be, and of course we can go a lot deeper than cheesecake. But does anybody feel like they want to share? So the challenges of being kind of stuck in bureaucracies and systems, functioning within systems, yeah, wanting to make a real difference, but. And so, in this sense, like, I mean, I think, you know, true and lasting happiness is also far to reach than it is out there, but we also can't be disheartened, you know, and recognize the steps that we take on a daily basis, you know, and not maybe think too far ahead. You know, as long as says is one of his favorite quotes, you know, as long as Dalai Lama, as long as space remains, as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain and dispel the miseries of the world. Right. And that courage, as someone talks about, is like no matter how long it takes, but that courage is almost developed through this altruism, right? Through this wish to bring happiness to others. Right. It's like I have to do this not for myself. I have to do this for all mother sentient beings. Right. So in this Buddhist notion, this notion that all beings have been our mother, we have to relate to all beings with that same kind of loving kindness. Right. And that is what gives us that courage or that enthusiasm to keep going. Right. One of the six perfections is perseverance. But for those of you who are Venerable Gendun's course over the weekend, I think he talked about it more as enthusiasm was the word, like how do we stay, or energy, you use the word energy, right? How do we kind of keep up this enthusiasm and this energy to continue to benefit others, right? To continue to cultivate this good heart, which we know is the real medicine. All the other things that we shared.
Shared that people would have everything, appear to have everything from a wealth point of view, take their own lives. I mean, it's how do we work that one out?
So I mean, that's what you know, the Buddha, the ancient Buddhist wisdom from 2,500 years ago, when, you know, Buddha attained enlightenment, and the first teaching he taught was the Four Noble Truths, which I'm going to get into later, right? And it's the truth of suffering, the first noble truth, the truth of suffering, right? And it's this, you know, who sang the song, you know, I can't get no satisfaction, right? And it's still true today that, like, the more we strive, the more we get, the more we want, right? The more we strive for satisfaction, the more we strive for some kind of, for more and more and more in this material world, this, you know, this kind of concept of consumerism, that it's not leading to lasting happiness. There are thousands of examples. You don't have to be a scientist to see that. Like, it's clear for all of us to see on an everyday basis. There are so many examples. So it's about, so if that's clear for us, the question in this course is, how can we cultivate lasting happiness, you know, and learning to find this equanimity, or this balance, this middle way. It doesn't mean giving up everything that we own, right, and going to a monastery in the Himalayas, or going to a cave in the Himalayas, right? We do have to function within society, you know, but how do we do it in a way that is not kind of going into this kind of extreme material way as well, right? So we'll just do a...
There's just been one actually just shared online.
Yeah.
She's saying, I've noticed that looking for happiness outside of one is more like relief not lasting.
Relief not lasting, looking for outside. Yeah, it's like retail therapy, right? It's like, okay, we'll go and get a few things and that'll be good for it. It's like how you try to appease your teenage children, you know. It's like, okay, you're having a bad day, we'll take you out for dinner, or we'll get you something, and like that'll kind of hold it off, you know, for a little while, right? And in this case, it's we continue to do that. We believe that those little things are going to make a difference, but it's, yeah, it's not. So on that note, we'll do another little guided meditation. Before we do that, we'll just look at this quote from Lama Sopa Rinpoche, which is, you know, how can we make our precious human life most beneficial? And again, it's this idea of not only for ourselves, right, but for those other most precious, important living beings. So this notion that, like, this self-cherishing thought, this wanting more for ourselves, this retail therapy, this doom scrolling, this, you know, whatever it is, this endless eating of the cheesecake until it makes us vomit. This is all kind of this thinking about me, 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 and mine. But how can we turn that outwards to others? How can we, instead of thinking about our self-cherishing and our own needs and wants, how can we transform that into desiring other people to be happy, who have those same needs and wants? So we're going to do another meditation. Along those lines. And just take a few breaths and try to relax and let go. Connecting to our breath helps to settle the nervous system. Wants to settle the mind. Can Just watch the inhale and the exhale. And I invite you to reflect on some hopes that you have, some wishes, some aspirations. What is something that you really wish for yourself and others? Just observe where your mind goes when we talk about hopes and aspirations and wishes. Don't have to judge. There's no right or wrong. Now I invite you to reflect on any fears you might have. If they're really heavy fears or kind of strong negative emotions, maybe think about something a little bit lighter. Some concerns or worries. You can just observe how that makes you feel. And then you can use the power of your mind to cognitively reframe that experience, that worry. Is that worry or concern something you can do, you can fix? Is it something you can make better? If so, then you don't have to worry. And if you can't do anything about it, then you don't have to worry either. But you can just let it pass. Maybe you'll observe the impermanent nature of these wishes and these worries. Have you always had them? Are they more recent? Have they changed? And if they have changed, maybe there's reason to think that they will continue to change. And in that way, we might also let go of our desires and our fears. Because we know they do not last. Just return your awareness back to the room. So this is what we were just talking about earlier, the introducing. And that is the Buddhist view of the Four Noble Truths. So some of you have been studying this well, and for some of you this evening, you'll be introduced to it for the first time. But it's something we can continue to contemplate in our everyday reality, right? As Ruby and Pauline first said, when we were talking previously in a previous conversation about, and it was, the words came up, suffering and happiness. So the first noble truth is the truth of suffering, and the Sanskrit word for this is dukkha. And essentially, it's that life contains dissatisfaction. It's not that this place is samsara. It's not that this world is samsara, right? But it's that our minds are in this potentially constant inability to find lasting happiness. Right? We're always looking for something more, right? Even the pleasurable experiences, even what we think is really yummy, like that cheesecake, the more we eat, the more we get, it doesn't feel so good, you know? Same thing that what we were saying before, you know, even some of the wealthiest, richest people who have everything in terms of, you know, materially in the world are often the most unhappy. So, you know, the Buddha taught this 2,500 years ago, but we're still seeing that today in our everyday life, this truth of suffering. And the Buddha said that this comes about not just kind of out of the blue, but there is an origin, there are causes and conditions that bring about suffering and bring about happiness. There are causes and conditions. There is dependent origination, right? Nothing just comes about on its own. Everything is interconnected, interwoven, and we are constantly creating causes and conditions that are leading to experiences. Okay. So for example, how we perceive something, our interpretation of an event, how our brain relates to, you know, the weather, for example, right, could be very different for all of us. But it does lead to an experience, right? So from a Buddhist standpoint, the mind is the creator of our experience. Our minds create our experiences, okay? Our mind creates our reality. We can all look at the same thing and have a different experience based on how our mind perceives or interprets. And that's a really key point. We experience this suffering in a sense because of kind of some distorted perception of reality. Right. Like a delusion. And good thing, as the Buddha said, we can also, because everything is dependently originated, we can create causes and conditions to end suffering and find happiness. And that is the truth of the path. So freedom from suffering is possible through working with our minds. We can cultivate lasting happiness, a more peaceful state of mind, a mind that is not always clinging to wanting more, a more content or less dissatisfied mind. And that peace is not something that we get from outside. It's something that is cultivated within all of us. You know, I was listening to Venerable Gendun on the weekend talk about the nun who had dementia, but then met the Dalai Lama, and for a bit, like everything just changed. Do you remember that story? You didn't hear that? Or just like somehow His Holiness just helped to kind of just like brighten her world for a short time towards kind of the end of her life. And these Buddhas, they have this ability, living Buddhas in the world have this ability to know how to, you know, relate to each and every one of us, to give each and every one of us what we need. You know, and I had the incredible good fortune to meet His Holiness a few years ago and offered him a statue of Manjushri, the Buddha of Wisdom. And I went with my whole family. My wife is half Tibetan, half Nepali, and my daughter Yeshi is 16, and my son Namsel is 13. And His Holiness like interacted differently with all of us. Kind of joked around with my kids a little bit more, and pulled my wife in more for like a hug. And to me, His Holiness said, because I offered the statue of Manjushri, the Buddha of Wisdom, I'm not sure if we see Manjushri around here, but His Holiness said, we don't pray to Manjushri to get blessed from outside, but we pray to Manjushri, or we pray to the Buddha in a sense to change our heart from within. And His Holiness pointed to his heart. You know, and for me, that was like it was like the whole essence of the teachings in those two lines, that it's not about like trying to get blessed by God or some, you know, celestial being, but it's like just trusting that within us, we have the seed of compassion that we can cultivate. And it is within all of us. And that can be continually, like if you think about it, like the mind, like a garden, right? Where we're like trying to cultivate a beautiful garden, beautiful flowers and everything. It's like continually doing that gardening with our own mind and changing it within, right? So it's like, how do we be our own gardeners with our minds, with our brains? And that's kind of the path that the Buddha talked about, right? That we can be our own gardeners, we can cultivate our happiness through planting the right seeds, through, you know, creating the right causes and conditions for happiness, you know, which is really the development of loving kindness, compassion, and wisdom, right? So that's the truth of the path. So those are the Four Noble Truths, and we see how they come up in our everyday life. And I invite us to like continue to look at how those happen, like throughout our days, throughout our weeks, through this course, how the Four Noble Truths continue to show up. And then like beyond that, it's like this truth of suffering, right? Where does that actually come from? And in Buddhism, we talk about like the three poisons or the three root afflictions. And so we see here like the pig, the snake, and the rooster, right? And it's like they're all kind of connected, and they represent attachment, aversion, and delusion. Okay, as being kind of like the core to what is creating this suffering experience. So attachment is essentially clinging to this notion, this like fake notion of self, right? This notion of self, or this deluded notion of self, which creates in itself, which creates like either like, you know, something that you want or something that you don't want, an attachment or an aversion, right? And I think all of this really stems from ignorance or delusion, right? It stems from really not necessarily grasping the true nature of reality, right? Because our mind projects so many different interpretations or experiences onto everything we go through on a daily basis. So it's completely it's like a distorted view, if that makes sense. Okay, so these root afflictions are at the core of kind of what creates this experience of suffering, attachment, aversion, and delusion. And our job is to try to find a way to cut them in our daily life, right? Where we're surrounded by things that we either like, don't like, or like too much, or don't like, or misunderstand. So maybe we'll just do a quick think per share here about like attachment, anger, or aversion and delusion, and how they've maybe shaped your actions. If you have some like relatable experiences, if you want to share that with your talking partner, your buddy. And then I think for people online, sorry, because you're not here, but if you want to kind of also, you know, kind of reflect on some of these. I'm sorry, that's the wrong slide. If you want to reflect on some of these questions about attachment, anger, and delusion, and how they might relate to your everyday experience. So are there any examples that you want to share? How like attachment or aversion or delusion might kind of show up in their everyday life? To discomfort. And we all want that. We all naturally do that, though, like in so many ways, you know, whether it's like shifting our body position because, you know, it's, we're feeling a little bit uncomfortable because we've been sitting here for an hour and a half. Like that's just this natural tendency, right? To get away, get away from the discomfort and try to feel some comfort, whether that's physical, whether that's a thought that we have, you know, whether it's like our stomach's rumbling because we're a bit hungry and it's dinner time almost, and what am I going to have for dinner, right? All of these things. So it's like it's just like constant throughout the day, where we have these little attachments and aversions that are a part of what we are. And that leads me to talk a little bit about the eight worldly concerns, where like attachment and aversion show up so often. And that's like this attachment to receiving praise, right? Or what we don't want to receive, right? We don't want to be blamed for something. It's your fault, right? That's already like two perfect examples of what we really like people telling us. Oh, you look, you know, you look wonderful today, or you've got a wonderful smile, or like, you know, whatever it is. We like hearing nice things about ourselves, right? And we don't like to be blamed. And same thing about reputation, right? The reputation is actually written in Buddhism. It's really a tough one. You know, it's like sometimes we don't even realize it, like this kind of attachment we have to reputation, right? Or an aversion to having a bad reputation. Okay. And the same thing about gain or loss, whether that's in a material sense or an emotional sense, or with, you know, in social sense with friends or family, right? And then, of course, with pleasure or pain. But what we're finding through all these eight worldly concerns is they're kind of all extremes, right? It's like this attachment to something that we perceive as being good for us, right? And this aversion to something that is uncomfortable and we don't like. And so going back to the Four Noble Truths, right? That's kind of what the Buddha was talking about, is like learning how to renounce a lot of that, learning how to let go a lot of that, right? And learning how to the truth of the path, learning how to walk a middle way, right? And that process of letting go is understanding the true nature of things, right? Is increasing wisdom and lessening delusion, is increasing compassion and weakening attachment, right? So those are kind of those tools, right? And that's why it causes suffering, right, Ruby? Because it's like you're just it's constantly thinking about me and this delusion of like this reputation, right? Or this praise, this attachment to this praise that we might want, or this material object, or whatever it is, right? And knowing that they're impermanent, they don't last. However, you know, solid or we might perceive, or immovable we might perceive ourselves to be, like it doesn't last, it changes. You can just look, you know, Buddhism, we believe in reincarnation and in beginningless and endless time, but you can just look since the beginning of your first memories, how much you have changed as a person and how your desires have changed and how your perception of self has changed in that time, right? It's we are so impermanent. Tomorrow we'll wake up a little bit different. We'll be somehow changed a little bit from this experience. You know? And then we need to continue to cultivate that.
Just a comment on from Anne on March. Says, when I notice or experience disrespectful behavior towards others or myself, I can be very quick to judge. I have to wash my mind of the technique into frustration and anger. Not that I'd be acting on it, but by having those emotions come up, they can take over and destroy my efforts to be at peace with the discomfort of things not going my way.
Yeah, really well said. I think this a really difficult part of the human experience is like this tendency we have to judge right from wrong, good from bad. You know, and we have different things that we feel more strongly about, right? But, you know, this, whatever, if it's like disrespectful behavior and kind of judging it and letting it kind of like impact our peace of mind, but understanding that actually like that is not our mind. Those are just words, right? Whatever, like if somebody said something like disrespectful, like those are just words. They're nothing but air. Right? How are we going to let them destroy our peace of mind? Right? And so just kind of like trying to understand that we are responsible for how we interpret everything. And of course it's difficult. And that's why we continue to cultivate awareness, right? That's why we continue to cultivate awareness. This is the first time I really didn't know how long an hour and a half was going to take, and go here. So I'm probably only about sort of about five slides to go, but I'll just kind of quickly just kind of scan some of these, and then we'll end with a little short meditation. Sure. So I'll just quickly introduce the nervous system. So we have, you know, our nervous system, and that's kind of divided into two parts. We have our central nervous system, which is basically our brain and our spinal cord, and then our peripheral nervous system, which is also divided into two parts, our sensory and motor systems, and then we have a somatic and autonomic, right? And then that's further divided into parasympathetic and sympathetic nervous systems. And those are the ones that I just want to kind of elaborate on a little bit, in terms of like the workings of the mind and how they can connect with our sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous systems, especially in the case of hyperarousal and hypoarousal, right? So hyperarousal is, you know, where we experience anxiety, where we feel overwhelmed, where we feel stressed, where we feel restless. And that's kind of essentially when our sympathetic nervous system is in overdrive. You know, we've been working all day long, we've been driving through traffic, we've been dealing with my kids or a friend who's upset about something. We've still got so many things to prepare for tomorrow, including dinner, and we're stressed out about this and that, and it continues to go on and on and on. Right. And basically what happens is our sympathetic nervous system continues to get more and more tapped into, more and more overloaded, and then it gets more and more challenging for our parasympathetic nervous to kind of kick in and do its job of finding that balance, that body-mind balance. And so that's where meditation comes in. That's where contemplative practices come in. That's where just breath work comes in. Simply being with the breath. And awareness of the breath. And recognizing kind of the impermanent nature of all of these things that are stressing us out. And just releasing them with the breath. So using meditation, using the breath, using awareness to gently release this stress by tapping into our parasympathetic nervous system. Okay. So different things we can do to continue to tap into our parasympathetic nervous system throughout the week when we have this sensation of like hyperarousal or stress or anxiety, right, is practicing compassion for ourselves and others, is going for walks, is being in nature, right, is learning to just slow our breathing, is just like gentle stretching and movement. These are all different grounding techniques we can use to kind of tap into our parasympathetic nervous system. All right, so we're just going to to close with a short meditation on equanimity, just awareness of our body and our breath. I think we started a couple minutes late, so is it okay if we go a couple of minutes later? So what we're going to do with this last meditation is we're just going to focus on awareness of the breath. The inhale, the exhale. And just keep your spine nice and straight. Your feet or your legs grounded in the floor. And as thoughts come, just observe them and return to the breath. Don't need to judge the thoughts. Whether they're good or bad, happy or sad. Just observe and let go. And know that this is training the mind, that our brains have neuroplasticity. That we are pliable. We're not just capable of change, we are in the nature of change. The amazing thing is that we have very natural capability for loving kindness and compassion, which we can continue to cultivate. And the more that we can connect back to our breath when our mind wanders and we notice that, the more we're training our mind in concentration. Wisdom. Because a focused, clear mind is a happier mind. Let's return to the room. So you see, from this kind of neuroscience standpoint, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the work of Dr. Richard Davidson. If you're not, I would recommend that you kind of read some of his, or watch some YouTube videos or whatever, some of his work. And when he talks about, you know, meditation, meditative techniques or mind training and neuroplasticity and what is happening with the brain, and just how we can continue, even when we have that monkey mind, those thoughts that go all over the place, how we can continue every time we recognize that with awareness and return to the breath, we are telling our brain that we can do this. Telling our brain that we can do this. So with that, we'll continue to dedicate and cultivate, you know, this awareness of our mind, continue to generate compassion and wisdom through tonight's efforts, through the efforts that we have already put forth and that we will continue to put forward. And we'll just do a final prayer. This is called the Four Immeasurables. And it's again, this kind of based on this altruistic wish for compassion, and maybe we can read it together. So may all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings never be separated from the supreme joy that is beyond all sorrow. May all beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment and aversion. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Have a nice evening, everyone.
Thank you.